There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my.
You know, I want to lead in with some of the texts that I've gotten here in the last few minutes, and we will. But beforehand, let me just point out, you know how you can tell if somebody's like been at your house, like if you, like family member or something, somebody's been in there, or somebody's driven your truck, right? The seat's not in the same place, all that. There's clues online as well. And I, Dalton, maybe you can help. So I'm opening up the YouTube feed because we're gonna run some audio here in just a second from there. And I see top thing up here in suggested videos. Suggested, because I searched my video. And then breaking down the UGA players in the Senior Bowl. So Dog Nation, who possibly out of my friends and coworkers here would my YouTube be leading with Georgia football players coming to the Senior Bowl? I don't know. I just think somebody's been leaving their crumbs here. Lead suggested thing on YouTube for me, breaking down UGA players in the Senior Bowl. All right. Hey, Dan. All right. Let's get to this. So some of the text here, and then coming up on the show, so Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to join us, get his perspective, Democrat perspective on yesterday's inauguration, because I was not just partisan-wise. I'm going to break this down. I just was not as excited as others about what happened. It was fine. I don't think it was, you know, going to be the Gettysburg Address. No, I agree with Jeff on that. But we'll talk to Robert about that. Also, Tony Kennan joining us later in the show. Coming up in just a little bit, Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. I'll read these two texts back to back. First of all, Jason says, welcome to the Chris Wallace is a fraud club, Sean. Giving me the laughing thing. And then this next texter says, Chris Wallace is in the closet liberal Democrat. Okay, so that is a good pivot for me here. If I want all reporters are human beings. They're human beings and they have political, I would assume they would have political opinions, right? They're not political eunuchs out there, are they? Right? They're not like geldings, right? So they have political opinions. It's when you are a journalist and you let that affect what you do is a problem. My personality is, in this setting here, I'm an editorialist, but if I'm being a journalist, the way my personality is, I will fight what my preconceived notions are to try to make sure I'm finding truth, right? And that's what I would hope. So I don't, every reporter, I'm sure is, you know, they're left, majority of them, I think you could tell, are left, but there's some that are right. I don't want to know. What was the Clinton thing? Don't ask, don't tell. Let's don't ask, don't tell. So when Chris Wallace would question President Trump and do it, you know, like not maybe adversarial to some people, but to me it was aggressive. I was saying, well, he's doing his job. But then yesterday, this.
I thought it was a great speech. I've been listening to these inaugural addresses since 1961. John F. Kennedy, ask not. I thought this was the best inaugural address I ever heard. Obviously, a lot of this event today, a lot of the president's speech was colored by the emotion of the fact that exactly 2 weeks ago, 14 days ago, there was a mob of thugs, of insurrectionists, of domestic terrorists on the inaugural stand. And Joe Biden was saying that democracy prevailed. We were able to get through that. And he was talking about how we need to get through that in the future if we are going to be a united country. He talked about white supremacy, domestic terrorism. He said we must confront it. We will defeat it. My whole soul is in this, uniting our people.
Yeah, okay, so there's some of the gushing from Chris Wallace, the fawning over the inaugural speech. And so I went back and listened again. I said, you know, Sean, go listen to this closely. So I did the 24 minutes of it or whatever, and I just don't get – I didn't hear, obviously, what Chris Wallace did. And just saying that a speech is – it's like handicapping the speech, right? That the fact is, because 2 weeks previous, the – you know, the dirtbags that thought they were going to – go zip tie up the members of the legislature and take people hostage and accomplish what? I don't know what the Apple Dumpling Gang thought they were going to do. But because they did that, that somehow you have a, it makes the speech better. You have to judge the speech on its own. Now, if you want to say, hey, in addition to the speech being whatever it is, it was a, you know, realize that we had what, you know, look at the pictures from 2 weeks ago, look at the pictures now. That's fine. That's fine. You could do that. But he didn't. He basically said because of what had happened 2 weeks ago, then the speech was one of the greatest speeches he had ever heard. That just doesn't make sense. To me, that's not even, he should be embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for him. He should be embarrassed. And I'm not talking about all the other journalists. I could do like about everybody else in conservative talk media and play the clip of all the MSNBC folks and all the people falling over themselves and all this. Listen, that's to be expected. That's a dog bites man. But for Chris Wallace, who projects that he is this hard-hitting journalist and is going to get to the truth, he's not going to let his personal opinions come through, do that, he just loses the whole thing there. Just out at that point. And then a couple things more. So this question about where the Biden presidency is going to go. You know, Dalton and Dan were talking about this morning. And, you know, if you listen to it, it's a pandemic and white supremacy, right? Those are the two big things.
Few people in our nation's history have been more challenged or found a time more challenging or difficult than the time we're in now. Once in a century virus that silently stalks the country. A rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat.
Okay. So extremism was on display last night, not from Trump supporters, but yeah, you look at Portland and elsewhere. But I want to point out, no excuse, zero excuse for the people that are Trump supporters or QAnon adherents or whatever for what they, no excuse. Punt them. Put them in jail. They go in there and knock through and assault Capitol Police. I got no love for them. But they were a small group. And if President Biden said, we're going to go after the people, which is already happening, that assaulted the Capitol, I'd be like, oh, right on. Right on. That's what you should be doing. But to leave this open to who the enemies of the state are, even though the whole idea, right, was this unity, which I would hope we would have unity as best as we could. I am a, and I will be through the years of the Biden presidency, I will be a loyal opposition. I always am. I believe in this republic. I believe in the Constitution before I believe in human beings, except the human beings that wrote the Constitution. But I want to point out when you do this, and then you've got John Brennan, so former head of the CIA. I want to play this two more clips here, and then because I got Cameron Smith is going to join us here. Two more clips real quick here. So John Brennan, yesterday, former CIA head, had this to say. He's on MSNBC and says this. And yes, did my ox get gored? Do I have a dog in this hunt? I do. Let's listen.
That the members of the Biden team who have been nominated or have been appointed are now moving in laser-like fashion to try to uncover as much as they can about what looks very similar to insurgency movements that we've seen overseas, mm-hmm. where they germinate in different parts of a country and they gain strength, and it brings together an unholy alliance frequently of religious extremists, so authoritarians, fascists, bigots, racists, nativists, even libertarians.
Even libertarians? How can you get... Most Exalted John Brennan, how can you get authoritarians and libertarians to agree? That's one of the things that you know, rubs people the wrong way about me, that have a conservative authoritarian streak. I don't got it. Okay? I got a libertarian streak. I lead with liberty. But if that's part of the laser-like approach that they're going to round up the people, you know, he says, racists and bigots, that's not me. Whatever other ist or isms he laid out there. But libertarians? Somebody who would want more liberty is a threat? And then one more clip here, and then we're going to get Cameron Smith on in just a second. So Tucker Carlson's show last night, he had Glenn Greenwald on, which, you know, for authoritarians... Greenwald, but Greenwald had this to say too. So I mean, maybe I'm going to be looking libertarians. We may be looking to Greenwald for defense here.
Absolutely. A lot of times, if you warn of a danger, you have to piece things together in order to demonstrate that it's actually coming. In this case, you don't have to. They're right. Explicitly saying precisely what they want to do. The thing that struck me so much about that John Brennan video is, it would be one thing if they were saying, look, there's a band of people, 20 here, 50 over here, who wear swastika armbands, who still are in the KKK, there's maybe 2,000, we need to... That's not what they're saying. What he's saying is the exact opposite. Every group he lifted, even libertarians, it's essentially, he's defining the insurgency as anyone who has an ideology other than neoliberalism. And
bingo. Now, if that's the message of unity... I got a little trouble with that. Smarter heads prevail. My buddy Cameron Smith is going to join us in just a second here, and we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. It's all straight ahead on Midday Mobile. Where, Dalton, when they come for me because of my libertarian lean, can you cause like a distraction or something like that? Used to remember Schultz and Hogan's Heroes, when they distract him, then run out the other door? That's what I'm going to do, I think. All right, be right back.
This information update brought to you by the Guarantee Title Company, LLC, delivering proactive solutions for their clients in Mobile and Baldwin counties for over 50 years. The Guarantee Title Company. They guarantee title. That's what they do.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
You know, I don't know the timing of this text. If it came in while I was, because I've got a ton of text here trying to get through in the breaks, but at 12:13, I hadn't played the clip by 12:13. So somebody said, unnamed texter said, the market made the largest gains of any inauguration day in history yesterday. Why do you feel so threatened by Democrats? So first of all, let me say, I'm pointing out that you're the same thing I used to make fun of former President Trump about with, you know, well, look at the markets. They like what I did. The market will make fun of you for that. And number two, why would I feel threat? I don't know. Maybe because, you know what? If I have to identify as anything, I identify as a libertarian. And I now found out that they're coming after the likes of me because I like liberty. Maybe I can hide at my buddy Cameron Smith's house. You got room up there where I can come to your house?
Sure, man. You are always welcome here. I'll come down and pitch with you. And then you can come up here and hunt with me.
Good.
And we'll have enough to live off the grid.
Don't tempt me, brother. Don't tempt me. And that's not a political statement. That's just it'd be relaxing. All right. So it's Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. You and I did about a whole show there during the news break as well. They're coming after, you know, the authoritarians and libertarians. They run together, you know, like oil and water. What? Authoritarians and libertarians? What?
Well, I mean, and I use this example for your audience. I want to go through a real quick history lesson. In 146 BC, Scipio Africanus the Younger reached the walls of Carthage. Over 6 days, systematically killed everyone, burned all the buildings behind him. The military sold 50, 1,000 Carthaginians into slavery and set a curse on anyone who tried to resettle the area, and then there was peace with Carthage.
There was unity.
That peace, it's called a Carthaginian peace for a reason. That's what is being extended to so many conservatives, libertarians right now, is if you will submit by force, then, you know, we can get along. And I think they misunderstand unity. I don't want unity with your policies. I don't like what you're selling. We can have unity on the ground rules of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Let's unify there. But that's pretty much where we part company, and that's okay. I mean, I may agree with them on something, but the idea that unity means we need to be in lockstep and everyone who is not all in on what the Democrats want is not weirdo Buffalo man who sacked the Capitol. Like that, I know what they're doing, but that's just, it is a political lie.
It is like the most simplistic version of conflating groups. I mean, there's, you know, that they list all the, they say, you know, everybody is against these people that want to overthrow the Capitol. And I would say fair-minded people say, yes, absolutely. And then they go, and also, let me tell you about the libertarians. What? What?
Well, this is really interesting. And the phrase that your audience needs to pay attention to is this: no unity without accountability. This has been going on a loop on all of the cable news channels. AOC, other people have been saying it. Here's the thing, though. You know what the accountability measure is in America for political disagreement? Elections. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's how we solve it, right? I mean, but it's weird because the Democrats are like, yeah, we won in Georgia. We won the White House, but now we want to spank you.
Yep.
We want to tell you you're bad. And until you admit that you're bad for voting for Trump, you can't be a part. And as much as I've criticized President Trump, because I do believe he had a lot of good ideas and there were a lot of good platform policies that could have been very successful, and it was his personality that lost the election and tanked Georgia. But, I mean, Democrats want to make this about weirdo Buffalo guy, President Trump, anything but having to actually start defending an agenda that nobody really wants. And that's what I'm trying to move the conversation towards.
Yeah, and if you're talking unity, you said something at the beginning that you're not in lockstep with policies, but you agree on some basic tenets. And that, you know, you went back to the Punic Wars. I will go back to the coyote and the sheepdog, and they would fight it out, right? The sheepdog was doing his thing. Coyote was doing his thing, trying to get some sheep, trying to get the roadrunner. But at the end of the day, they would clock out and be civil, even though that they were fighting like coyotes and dogs the rest of the day. And that is what needs to be done. That's the problem, is we've moved away from that, and everybody goes to their signs, and it's not just I disagree with the ideas. That person's anything but a child of God that I disagree with. So if we're going to do healing on this, you would think that would be part of the discussion yesterday in the inaugural speech about unity, not, hey, we're coming for you now. I mean, it's like the words and the actions aren't lining up, man.
Well, yeah, and I expect, I know this will shock you, Sean, there's going to be some hypocrisy in politics. That was coming. We know that this is going to come. But here's the problem. Conservatives and libertarians don't need to be outraged by this. We need to say, okay, this is the world we live in. This is the world as it is. They're going to be hypocritical about this stuff. Media is going to throw softballs. If we spend all our time being outraged at the distractions, we'll never get anything done. Meanwhile, here's a perfect example. Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman who's part of the famous squad, sends out this letter, and I retweeted it because it was a letter saying, let's not expand the government surveillance state in reaction to the Capitol attacks. And I'm like, wait, whoa, what? You've got somebody I disagree with frequently who puts forth an idea and a concept that I'm like, this is absolutely right. We don't need to expand the police state. We don't need more surveillance and domestic spying and things like that in reaction to this Capitol attack. But there's going to be a push for some of that. And for her to say, no, that's a bad idea. I don't agree with her on a lot, but man, I really agree on that. And so I want to give my voice to that and support that. And people need to be honest about that rather than just being outraged, saying the left is all bad and terrible. Well, yeah, they're wrong on a lot, but this idea that we're just going to be upset all the time because they do things we don't like, well, okay. I mean, that's not interesting or useful.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, you talk about Tlaib saying what she said, and that would be, we're in a world where, God forbid that you say that that idea is good. I say the same thing. I agree with you on that. I would imagine that Rand Paul would say the same thing, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, we can go down the list, and if that idea comes from anybody but her, I get a lot of Republicans being like, that's a great idea. We should absolutely say that. We support that. She says it, and people are like, are we sure it's not a socialist trap? And I'm like, well, I don't know, but I agree with it. And so, like, I mean, I don't know how it would be, but we're so suspicious. I mean, this was my column this past week. If we don't trust anything and everything is bad all the time and everything is negative and everybody's corrupt, then America doesn't work. And so I think we owe it to ourselves to say, do we trust the Constitution? Do we trust the structures? Do we trust the people? And if the answer is no, how do we fix it? Because I hear a lot of people telling me I can't trust anything. But then I say, okay, the things you're telling me I can't trust, I hear you, I'm not even arguing, but what can I trust? And they don't have an answer.
Coming right back, more with Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. A lot of text in here in the mix as well. We will talk about those when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we're streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. Also, this show, part of the 54 hours a week of live local programming, waiting for you in podcast form. Just go to fmtalk1065.com, click podcast, or better yet, subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify. Was that one? Deezer. I've never even seen Deezer, but Dalton says it's a thing. So you can get the subscription there. Yeah, so Chris is back and forth. He said, I'm not old enough to know about Hogan's Heroes. So, and my friend Cameron told me to just take the compliment, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, I am old enough to know about Hogan's Heroes, and I make that reference way too much. Probably lost a lot of folks. All right. So we're moving. Are we moving forward now? I mean, we have, new president here. The pandemic is still here. Of course, how some, in media portray it is changed. And we could, waste our time going through how each one of those has happened. But let's talk about this. So the pandemic, can you solve the pandemic with money? Because he's going to bring another 1,400 to the mix. That'll be 2,000. Does that cure COVID, or what do you think on that?
No.
No?
I mean, so I was kind of bored, and I'm nerdy, so I was, in the evening, I was taking some time to say, Democrats, they love the New Deal. It's sort of their fantasy land. And I said, well, I wonder how much the whole New Deal cost by today's standards.
Yeah.
And I adjusted it for inflation, and it's about $750 million. That was the whole New Deal, adjusted for today's spending. And
wow.
So we spend like two or three times the New Deal in like one COVID relief bill. And that's the kind of thing that like really should shock us.
Well, that's
where we are. And the money bombs, like as a solution, don't impact like the logistical challenges of actually doing the thing that needs to be done, like get out the vaccine. Alabama, I mean, has been a train wreck in dealing with vaccinations. And so you can throw more money at a train wreck, and it's still a train wreck. And that's what we're seeing. So I'm not saying that this is a bad idea to respond to COVID, but this is some of the worst policy in terms of tailoring to actual problems I have ever seen.
I want to go. I'm slack jawed here. Once again, you said comparing in today's dollars, it's how New Deal would be how much?
Well, I mean, they spent about $41.7 billion in the 1930s on New Deal programs, right?
WPA, and CCC, all that. Yeah. All that. Okay.
Exactly, all that. And then you adjust that for inflation, and you get $780 billion, something like that, in terms of 2020 dollars. And when we think New Deal, we think, well, it must have been the equivalent of trillions. It wasn't. It was big government spending, don't get me wrong. But comparatively to what we're doing right now, it is nothing. And that's what I don't think people really understand, is that the spending issue here is so profligate. Like, this is such irresponsible spending that we have never seen it before. And the idea that Republicans, many of them, are just like, well, we just go along with this. We think this is a thing. We don't like it really, but, you know, it's okay. If I were a member of Congress, if I were a Republican in Alabama or any red state, I would say, folks, I want to help people who are impacted by COVID, and I want to do that in a strategic way, and I'm happy to discuss that. But I would absolutely not vote for any of these measures or support them. And I wouldn't have supported the ones that, you know, came through prior to Biden being president.
Right.
I mean, it's just not responsible in any way.
No, and we got that on consistency. We questioned those and questioning it now. Now, of course, I always get from people in Washington, you know, there. You're unrealistic. We can't get anything done unless it's something like this. You know, we can't get anything strategic done. Well, that's our fault, I guess. Like you've said, we get the government we deserve.
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, I'd tell Jerry Carl that the big thing that needs to happen right now is, are you looking out for the interests of your constituents here? Or is it just like, well, you know, there's a lot of pressure for me to vote on the thing. Well, guess what? That pressure's manufactured by the people that want you to vote for it. It's not manufactured by your constituents. And so being able to draw that distinction and say, hey, I'm not going to support this until we start doing something that looks normal, I think that's pretty reasonable, and his constituents should get behind him on that.
I want to add this to the mix, because I'm always, and you're the same way, want to be fair. I think it's Rick saying there's many more people now than there was during the Depression. So, okay, let's double it.
Population growth, but not in that order of magnitude.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If we're probably double the population. I'm just guessing. We're double the population then, but still we're looking at some, and we're not. The problem with this is the mechanics of the economy didn't change. COVID changed it, but I mean, this isn't like 2007, right? I mean, this is something that's, I guess you could say all things are artificial in an economy, but it's outside the regular economic loop that makes this happen.
Yeah, and some of the narratives that people were saying turned out to not be true. Like, a lot of the state revenue issues and things like that have not been nearly as damaging as people thought they were going to be. Now, personal livelihoods, people have lost jobs. Like, man, we should help those people out. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. I think it's a good idea. But help those people rather than just throwing money at stuff and it not, you know, not being narrowly tailored, not being able to explain to constituents, here's why we spent trillions and trillions of dollars, as opposed to doing something in a more targeted fashion. And, you know, this is a leadership problem. And I think our representatives need to be able to answer tough questions about this rather than saying simply, well, you know, there was a lot of pressure to do it and we want to help people because of COVID. That's just not a good rationale.
No, but it's yeah. You make the thinking person's argument. People that are all, you know, gut check, they'll be you don't care about people if they don't slow down enough to think about it. I want to run through something here with you. So a lot's been talked about here of the executive actions that were undone or new executive actions on day one for President Biden. I think 17 of them, and I forget how many former President Trump did on day one. What this shows me, and correct me where I'm wrong, is we could get mired in the politics of these executive actions, but to me it just shows that the legislature is not doing its job, that this is the way we run things. It's the judicial branch, it's SCOTUS, and it's executive actions.
Amen. I mean,
I'm okay on that one? You agree?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it. I wrote the RAINS Act. The RAINS Act is designed to force Congress to do more, to have accountability for its own power rather than just punting it to the executive branch. And so what the executive branch can do right now in terms of executive orders and regulations is insane. they don't actually, I mean, Joe Biden does not need Congress for most things. Now, big initiatives maybe, but he already has enough regulatory authority to just do kind of what he wants. And that's a big problem because that's not how the Constitution envisioned laws being created and enforced. And yeah, so don't cry about it because we've allowed this system to exist. And Republicans had the House, Senate, and White House in 2016 and 2017. They absolutely could have restrained the executive, but they kind of liked Trump having power.
Right, but it's this. The pendulum always swings in our political cycle, but it swings so quickly and at a bigger arc when you're defined by the Supreme Court on one end and then executive actions on the other. I mean, it's the legislative branch, as in law. They punt this stuff. I've been complaining about this for a long time, but you're seeing it. They're like, oh, well, it was Keystone XL, and now it's not. And it's, well, that's done because these things are made through executive action, not a slower, more deliberative body like the Congress.
Yeah, and nobody likes slow things. Like, we live in an on-demand culture, so I get why people like it. But divided power makes a lot more sense, and it's way more effective. And I think this is what people need to realize is the winner-take-all politics with the White House is a bad idea. I didn't think the cult of personality with Trump was a good idea. I didn't think the Obama can do nothing wrong was a good idea. The problem is when you consolidate that much power under one branch of government, it makes it really, really hard to have that accountability check. And right now, the only accountability checks we ever have are when Congress is of another party than the president. That's it. And that's obviously not going to happen right now.
What do you see on these big initiatives or pushes with having bicameral Democrat control and obviously control of the White House? Is it wish list? Just get everything done? Do you think there will be defections within Democrats that make this more? How streamlined is this for President Biden?
It's not as streamlined as, the talking heads on cable news would like it to be or, are afraid of it, depending on your perspective. Because that Senate majority, the only time that the tiebreaker comes into effect is if all Democrats vote one way, all Republicans vote another. I think we're not going to see too many of those things. For example, I use court packing. If there was an effort to try to pack the Supreme Court, they're not going to have the votes. You're going to have enough Democratic defections, a Joe Manchin or somebody like that coming across saying, nope, we're not going to do it. So they will control the agenda. They will be able to put things out there. But the big thing that Democrats like to do is big spending on stuff. And frankly, Republicans don't have a leg to stand on right now in saying no to spending because they've said yes to spending like they were drunk for, at least the last year or two. I mean, so how do you say, well, actually, now that y'all are in charge, this is really irresponsible.
Yep.
I mean, nobody's going to take that seriously.
Well, and that's the problem. When you're not consistent, you get in that situation. And I don't know who is left to care, because let's say that there's a splintering. Former President Trump comes back in 4 years and runs, the Trump Party. And that is a populist movement, one that, garners 70-something million votes right there. And then you have President Trump saying, yeah, we're going to put America first. I'm going to spend this money. You're going to get money. You're going to get money. You're going to get money. And then there's some Republican out there that says, yeah, you're not going to get – I'm going to give you liberty. I don't have any just give away money, but I'm going to give you liberty. I'm scared they lose, man.
Yeah, well, that's the problem of selling sanded cauliflower is nobody wants it. to be like, I've got the best sanded cauliflower around, and people are like, well, that's great, but, like, that's gross. And I think that's what a lot of folks have when liberty is your thing, but we have to not think of it in terms of liberty, because liberty is like cash, right? It's a means to an end. So you got to tell people, well, what are the ends? What are the things that we want to do, and what does it look like? And right now, Republicans don't think like that. It has been cult of personality. It's been whatever Trump wants. And we've got to come back and say, hey, well, here's some ideas. Here's some things that people can rally around. And hey, look, it's going to have to be big tent. That's the only way Republicans win, is by saying, hey, they're censoring you. They don't like you, but we like you. You can come work with us, but we have to figure out an agenda that connects with real people that and stop being reactive to Democrats who they throw out big ideas all the time. And we're like, that's a dumb idea. Well, where are our big ideas? Why are we not forcing them to knock down our stuff? I mean, and that's a problem we need to have answers for.
Well, I mean, but what kind of big ideas come from this big tent Republican Party that win, right? I mean, what we understand that liberty is like, yeah, Sandy Cauliflower. So what do they do?
Well, I think we need to realize that all policy, all governing basically comes down to three things. It's having an economic opportunity, decent health care so you can take advantage of those opportunities, and seeing a future pathway for your children. Like, that's what the American people really care about, right? Those are really broad, big-ticket items. And so figuring out ways that aren't just a big government New Deal type thing to engage there. Like, for example, I think there's a lot that we can do, particularly on entrepreneurship. There's a lot of small businesses that just got crushed from coronavirus. Making it easier for them to start up and grow and not putting more burdens on them. Like, the Democrats are saying, hey, let's dump a minimum wage on these folks. Well, why don't you say, okay, if y'all are going to push that, we want to push an offset in a tax credit so that those businesses aren't further burdened by this minimum wage you're going to try to jam down their throats. Well, and it's creative things like that we have to be tactical about.
Yeah, and maybe that is better than coming out and saying that if you raise this minimum wage too much in the times of automation, you might be having people lose their jobs. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's going to be job loss due to a minimum wage hike. But there's also, you know, it's a bridge too far. For example, D.C. has had a minimum wage of, like, I think it is $15 an hour for a while now. And the tacos at Taco Bell are not $38, right?
Right.
And so people use these kind of extreme examples, and they're kind of dumb. My point is, yeah, you're going to have a move to automation if that minimum wage is too high. But the real problem is that you're hitting people on multiple levels. So, yeah, that worker may get marginally more income, but you're creating a larger tax burden on the business and a larger personnel expense. And so finding ways to alleviate the burden on the thing that creates the job opportunities in the first place makes sense. It may not make Republicans happy, but coming up with those type of, hey, why don't we figure out how to blunt the push and still engage the interest of helping people? That's how you win. Same thing with a lot of environmental policy. You know, have the hook and bullet type environmentalism. Look for ways to use market-driven incentives to address environmental issues rather than saying, well, climate change isn't a thing. We don't want to talk about that because they're going to throw a big government program at you. You better have an alternative.
There you go. One last question here. A lot of questions for you on the text line, but I want to grab this one here because your time in Washington, understanding kind of how things work. Texter says, any ideas on Democratic legislative agenda by priority? Do you have a sense of what might be number one, two, three?
One's obviously the COVID stuff. They're going to blast that through, and I think Republicans are just going to have to kind of go along with it. The question is what the Christmas tree looks like. Do we get minimum wage? Do we get other things in that package that Republicans don't want? The problem right now for Democrats is they don't actually agree, right? So Medicare for all, climate stuff, I mean, those are all in the mix, but they don't have right now a consensus that they all agree on. And until that happens, Republicans are actually in pretty good situation because if they can pick off one or two in the Senate, they can gum up the works real fast. And, you know, it's creating pressure on those more moderate senators. And they actually in the House, too, more moderate Democrats, because the margins aren't huge for the majorities right now. And we should use that to press on them.
There you go. And remind folks, too, they can, of course, read your work at AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. What's your elevator speech on what is the Triptych Foundation?
Thanks, Sean. The Triptych Foundation, we really believe that a lot of the problems that you and I talk about are a matter of culture. Right. We believe that media, business, and politics ultimately shape our cultural trajectory. We do a lot on politics, right? But at the end of the day, if you don't have a media environment and a business environment that supports the principles of liberty that we care about, it's hard to succeed. And so that's what the Triptych Foundation is set to do, is leverage charitable dollars to invest and engage in those areas to create a better character.
There we go. Cameron, as always, I appreciate our conversations, and we will check in again next week.
Thanks, John.
All right, Cameron Smith, AL.com, and like you said, Triptych Foundation. Check them out online, see what it is all about. Coming right back, we'll grab some calls. And coming up in hour number two, my friend, imagine that, huh, in today's world, Democrat, Robert Kennedy Jr. joins me. We'll get his response to yesterday's inauguration, some of the stuff that Cameron and I were just talking about. And at 1:30, we'll talk to Mayor of Orange Beach, Tony Kennan, says, you folks that aren't from around here shouldn't be getting the vaccines. But we'll talk about that, too.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, grab a couple texts here before we get a news update. So, yeah, Jeffrey says, I feel more in danger now than I ever have. They do more to push us away every day. Yeah, you know, and Jeffrey, from what I heard yesterday, now, not all from President Biden, who did a little bit of it, but the talking heads, I got to say, I agree with you, Jeffrey. Tony, great spirit here. Great spirit. Tony says, I have so many friends getting checks that never needed it, never missed a paycheck, and were not impacted. Such a waste. We got $87.02. I'm not sure why, but we did. I'm going to dinner for my boy's birthday tonight. The server is getting an $87.02 tip. I challenge people to do something. Now, Tony, I like your spirit. Keep it in the mix. Once again, it's not that Cameron and I both, because we're aligned on that subject. I want people that lost income, jobs, businesses because of the government shutdown to be made whole. But just saying, well, times are tough, so we're just going to give everybody money. Y'all, eventually, you have to pay this back. I know. Stick in the mud. I'll be right back.